Good afternoon, and thanks for having me over here. It's my second visit to Montreal, long time ago. I was here in 95, so it's been a while. I want to talk this afternoon about social media and their alternatives after Snowden, which means basically look at how things have dramatically changed over the last half year. And for me, what really brings this together is that the kind of, as I say here, the neoliberal consensus of the technical engineering class has bursted with the NSA scandal. It has also become clear across the field how many geeks and engineers have been involved actively in supporting and working for the NSA, implementing, and well, we could maybe even say with Trevor, we could see that as a, you know, maybe as an everyday digital labor. They are forced to do that work, but we can also you know, question whether this has really been the case, whether they are forced to. Anyway, there is a situation now where this consensus has come to a halt, and one very significant controversy that happened in my own country in August, in this hacker event early August, Observe Hack Make. Some of you here were present there. It was a tent event, so there were 4,000 or 5,000 people camping outside. And what is so interesting is that for the first time during those very, very, let's say, male geek oriented events, a huge controversy was played out over this company that was the sponsor of the event, Fox IT, which is basically a security firm. And it is known, and it's been known for at least 15, 20 years, that the vast majority of hackers who are visiting these events are working in the security industry. In the very, very beginning, a lot of them would work, at least in the Netherlands, for the online porn business. But that has certainly shifted since probably the late 90s. We have seen this shift towards the security industry, who is employing hackers and who is actively involved, you know, in direct contact with them to find out, you know, who is the best, who they can employ, and so on, and so on. So, for the first time, an organized resistance, let's say, manifested itself, and this kind of, was played out as one of the first, you know, public rows, and it dominated the whole camp. And even led to physical fights, literal fights, and that's for the very, very first time. And that was for me, you know, the signal 2 months after the first documents of Snowden came out, and the whole ball started rolling. Of course, there were other smaller events happening before, but that's very important. For me, this is a kind of a manifestation also of what political theorist Chantal Mouffe has been writing about. And this is her latest book. I can recommend it to you just to because she has been writing a lot about the kind of this end of the consensus culture, and she is emphasizing that a political democracy needs conflicts, that we should not be afraid of conflicts, and that conflicts do not necessarily have to be violent. You know, they don't have to end up in a kind of a civil war situation. She says that we need to work on the cultivation of these conflicts instead of suppressing them immediately. And this, in my view, is particularly the case with internet, with geek culture, but also if you look at more detail in internet governance, think of the way ICANN is run, think of IETF and so on and so on. There's a culture there that has instrumentalized this need for consensus for corporate agendas, and this is now becoming a problem. Of course, there is the political pressure of the street, and I find that important, and I want to emphasize that. This is a protest in Berlin. This is the one. It's somewhat smaller in Washington. It is really important for people to organize themselves also in traditional ways to make themselves visible. Also in this, especially in this field. This is really the beginning, but we can say, well, this is just a manifestation of the collective anxiety that is out there in society, right? So what I'm going to talk about here now is what this outro is the implications of that for the scene itself, right? What happens after Snowden, let's say. I'm very inspired by this website. It's in German. Hasn't been translated yet, but I find it very, very interesting because it really tries to be very, very open about the strategies that we need to develop under the new circumstances. The blog is called Kontrollverlust, loss of control, and what that means is that this person says we can only develop new political strategies if we understand on the new situation that we are in. If we continue to live in denial that we have lost control, then we either do nothing or we might, have used the wrong political tactics. That's very interesting. And of course, this is put in the German context. So what he is writing there particularly about is that this outrage over the loss of privacy is really not very productive, especially not for the movement that tries to do something about it. So he's not so much a person who argues about the end of privacy, which is of course a phrase that we've been hearing in the context of the Chaos Computer Club and its conventions already now for a good decade. It's not so much but it is the realization that this end of privacy is not motivating people to really start become involved. So this is the problem. The people are becoming a little bit apathetic about it, and it's not the right motive to really start political dissent. Now I want to speak a little bit about my own activities in this field. This is unlike us. It's a network of people who have been critical about the dominant social media platforms and who have been developing alternatives. It exists since 2011. And the network is about 800 or so people. There have been three or four big events about it so far. And here you can see some of the themes. Now, the themes, they're clearly looking at the domination of Facebook and Twitter in this particular market. But, of course, it is not so much focused, on let's say, the post-Snowden condition that we find ourselves into right now. So, of course, the working conditions, the topic that Trebert spoke about it, was a part of our original agenda. And there's a publication about this. You can download it, and I have also indicated that I can send you copies if you like. It's also available in print. And Ben Astiglaire, who will speak after us here, has a piece in this, and I'm very happy about that. Where he is kind of bridging the topics of the Unlike Us networks with his own philosophy and his own political project. Now, a lot of the initiatives that are associated with Unlike Us are rather small. I have to say it's still early days. The most maybe well-known one is probably this Europe Against Facebook. It's from very small group of law students in Vienna. But they're doing very, very effective work. So they often travel to Dublin because Facebook Europe is based in Ireland. And if you want to do something about Facebook on the legal level, you have to go to court in Dublin. So this is where they do their work. As I said, it's a bit questionable whether this is really the future in terms of the political strategy, because most of their work is still focused on this issue of the privacy. Many of you maybe know Ghostery or have installed some of the filters that are available. I personally find this quite an interesting strategy to reach, really millions of people and raise the awareness of what's going on. So there's now a whole class of this protective software. It's growing rapidly, and I'm always pointing at the possibility that people, they always say, "Well, what can I do about it?" There's not much. Well, you can stop. You can, like me, you can quit your Facebook account. Most people are not going to do that. So often in big debates, there is this issue of, what can I do? And, this is the least, you can do, at least at the moment, because these tools, they've all proven to be effective, and they're quite safe. That's okay, at least for the time being, right? Now, Unlike Us is a network where our emphasis have been a lot on bringing together the smaller platforms that exist right now that are under development. And there are, in fact, a whole range, at least 10 of 20 that I know of, alternative, let's say, software platforms where you can create your own social networks online. This is maybe a lesser known one, primarily with developers in the German-speaking countries. Maybe a bit more well-known is Loria from Spain, with a good 50 to 100,000 users, which played an important role in the movements of 2011 when they were occupying the squares, the Indignadas movements. Now, here in the United States, on this side of the Atlantic, there is of course crabgrass, which probably you know about it or you haven't heard about it, and that's an initiative by Rise Up, has been under development for quite some time, but now it seems to be taken off. Interesting here is that. The development, and we can see that also in the case of Loria, that over the last half year, the development of these platforms have more or less come to a halt. And why is that? The whole Snowden case really has put security on the number one agenda. Before, the problem was most likely, how would you like to organize the architecture of your social network? How open should it be? How closed? Do you want to involve friends, or is it really for collaboration on projects and so on? These were the discussions, before Snowden. Now the discussions are, of course, all about cryptography. Can we come up with systems that somewhat protect us? Yes or no? By the way, Loria, the Loria people have taken that whole question and the whole development of their social network again in another direction, and they have started to emphasize on the development of so-called P2P telecom systems. Think of kind of a Skype for the masses, something like that, which I also found very, very interesting. But in the case of Grabgrass, yes, the concerns are now focused on security. And on the Rise Up website, I found this very, very useful kind of distinction between in the debate about the four different types of security that we could focus on. And you could really classify a lot of the initiatives that I'm focusing here on and that we discuss here in one of these four categories: human, device, message, and network. And when I'm talking about, ICANN and IETF, I'm of course talking about the level of the network, for instance. And if we're talking about having secure email or something like that, you're talking about the level of the message, right? So that's in fact for activists and for journalists, very often the first level is very, very important, the human factor. Much discussed and still under discussion is, of course, is Tor, and I'm not sure. Is how many of you are using Tor? Oh, quite a lot. Yeah, that's good. So you'll make sometimes you'll be frustrated. Sometimes sometimes it's so slow, or you don't know why you're using it. And but sometimes especially if you know why you're using it, it doesn't really matter, because you know that it's halfway at least works. And I'm very, very interested in further promoting and, democratizing the debate around Tor. I think so far it's been fairly technical, and it's been a rather small community. But it would be very, very good if many, many of us started using it, just to try it, just to see it, just to get involved, and to tell others, how this system works, and to maybe to get involved also in the wider community of developers, because so far it's been really a rather small community of NGO workers, investigative journalists, and so on, and the debate about the role of cryptography in the architecture of the internet of the future is really crucial. And what we need at that level is really public debate and public involvement. And this is done, in many parts of the world now through the organization of the crypto parties. And crypto parties are places where not only developers come together, but also ordinary users can come with their phones, with their laptops, and so on. And yeah, can start discussing together, how they want to organize the internet security. So this is about a London crypto party that's coming up soon. But there's been for sure been crypto parties here in Montreal and so on. So I find this a very useful tool. But then again, we need to bring it to much larger constituencies, in my view. I found some really interesting and practical tools for activists. This information is now also spreading, and that's very useful. For instance, there's talk about crypt or die. Well, it's a bit drastic, but in some cases that's certainly the case. Yeah. This is kind of a manual. It's a manual in this case. Yeah, talking about blurring the faces, where you may take a picture, let's say in a demonstration, and the software automatically blurs faces. So, well, that's useful to know. I'm still very interested also in the future of WikiLeaks and what comes after it. This is the Dutch WikiLeaks platform, let's say the whistleblowers platform that was launched 2 months ago. And we had a very, very interesting, public row about it, a really passionate discussion about, how safe is this? Can you really make the claim that if people upload their secret, their documents through this website, that they are safe? Of course, they encourage everybody to use Tor while uploading, so that's a good start. But the debate about how we're going to assist whistleblowers in the years to come is really, really crucial in that sense. And it is important that we have public discussion about it. What I personally believed is that over time we will start to develop a political agenda in which the dismantling of the cloud will be a very, very important demand. So the cloud, which is kind of abstract and nowhere, I think it's very, very important that we start to make explicit where the cloud is, who belongs to it, who has legal jurisdiction over it. And also, I think it's very important, for instance, for students, that they demand that in universities we no longer use Google, we no longer use Gmail, and so on. Yeah, we need to withdraw from these global platforms, and I'm very, very much in favor of a renaissance of autonomous infrastructure, autonomous in the sense that people have their certain say about it themselves. Here it's called re-decentralization, I like that. I like that phrase. I think that's really what it's all about. But the discussion, in fact, unlike us and in many other circles, have in fact already moved on, and it's not so much a nostalgic romantic movement that longs back to the days when the internet was truly decentralized, right? It's not about that. This is the old graph. Maybe you remember it from 1881 from the RAND Corporation. 1, 2, 3. It made very clear how networks work. But these days, the discussion has moved on, and it's really now about how we are going to design the so-called federated web, and what is federation in technical terms, but also maybe in visual terms, in utopian terms. How do we federate? What does that mean exactly? And there's very little literature about it, in fact. Of course, there are certain federations. They were not quite widespread in the 17th century, for instance. The idea of federation goes back a long time. This is now where we need to bring the more fundamental and maybe even philosophical debate, because this is very, very necessary. With federation, of course, we mean that we integrate certain horizontal and vertical forms of organization, right? In one way or another, and that we need to politicize that debate about the forms of governance. Now, to close this presentation, I would like to say that I myself, together with my friend Ned Rossiter in Sydney, work on the concept of organized networks, and have been for quite some time. Of course, if you remember from other presentations yesterday, we have a strong emphasis on strong links instead of the weak links that social networks have started to exploit. And we believe that certainly for activists, artists, for researchers, it would be very good if we further develop the tools, that cultivate the strong links between us, because we believe that the way weak links have been exploited and have been cultivated has kind of run its course, and. In a way, this is not an argument to go back to small groups, because that's not so much the point. I still believe in large campaigns. For instance, I'm a supporter of Avaaz, and Avaaz, of course, as you know, they are experts in exploiting the weak links of millions of people, and they really have thrived on that. But we also know that Avaaz cannot work without the big commitment of smaller groups that prepare all the issues that at some point reach the Avaaz level, right? And that's what this particular form, this new organizational form, as we call it, the organized networks, is all about. Thank you very much.